Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Oklahoma continues to top statistics in the number of people it incarcerates. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, the state is second in the nation in its rate of incarceration at a rate of 700 per 100,000 in population. The national average is about 471. The state also imprisons women at the highest rate in the country, more than twice the national average. Over the past several years, there have been several efforts to reduce the incarceration rate in the state by determining what crimes can be better treated in a community setting with treatment and monitored oversight rather than imprisonment, at a net savings to taxpayers. Early release policies have been relaxed, and House Bill 3052, the Criminal Justice Reinvestment Act, was designed to lower prison populations and increase funding for community rehabilitative programs. But for most of that law's life, funding has been suppressed and the legislature unwilling to take the next steps. So proponents have introduced State Questions 780 and 781. Now, 780 would change the classification of certain low-level drug possession and property crimes from a felony to misdemeanor. Nearly 25% of the inmate intake into the Department of Corrections come from those sorts of crimes. State Question 781 would then take the savings from a smaller correctional system and fund community rehabilitative programs like substance abuse programs, mental health treatment, which in other states have reduced that overall crime rate. Former Oklahoma House Speaker Chris Steele has been a longtime vocal proponent of criminal justice reinvestment. He helped lead the fight for HB 3052, and today is the executive director of the Education and Employment Ministry that offers diversion programs and help for newly released inmates. He's also the chair of Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, which backs these two state questions. Chris Steele, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're, as chair of the Oklahoma for Criminal Justice Reform, you're a strong supporter of what are really two linked state questions, which will be on the November ballot, State Questions 780 and 781. When you look at the content of these two state questions, this very much reminds me of one of your main accomplishments as a state House Speaker, which was House Bill 3052, the Oklahoma Criminal Justice Reinvestment Initiative. Why do we need a state question?
Well, it's a great question, and we did start on criminal justice reform policies really in about 2010 is when we started really discussing the need to take a closer look at our current policies and ultimately charting a smarter approach to reducing crime and increasing public safety within Oklahoma. And so the premise then and the premise now is that we have to be able to differentiate between the low-level offender who could be better served through treatment, mental health care, and supervision in the community versus the individual who truly poses a danger to public safety or a threat to society and should be removed from the community. And unfortunately, in Oklahoma, we have tended to paint with a broad brush, and we look to incarceration in most cases for most crimes. And part of that is because there's not alternative options available in certain communities. And part of it is because many elected officials feel like it is politically advantageous to be perceived as quote-unquote tough on crime. And the way that you prove that you're tough on crime is through increasing the length of time that a person would be incarcerated and the number of crimes that are eligible for incarceration. Ultimately, we've learned that incarceration doesn't necessarily equate to a reduction in crime. In fact, in many cases, it causes a person to become more at risk of creating crime even after they've been incarcerated than before they've been incarcerated. And so we have an opportunity now through these state questions to sort of bypass the political gridlock that has led to Oklahoma having the highest female incarceration rate in the nation and the second highest overall incarceration rate, and present the issue directly to a vote of the people and let the people decide if they would like to ultimately make better use of state resources by investing in treatment and mental health care for individuals who battle addiction or mental illness over incarceration.
Now, in addition to politicians who are loved to be considered soft on crime, really, public perception for a lot of when they hear about crime, their reaction, first reaction, is to lock them up. You know, so how do you change that perception?
Well, I think it's through education. I think it's through awareness. And I think it's through advocacy efforts. What we know now is that a person who battles addiction or mental illness is not necessarily a bad person. They're an individual who needs help. And we also know that by addressing root issues or situations, conditions in a person's life, like addiction or mental illness, actually leads to a reduction in crime because you're treating the root cause behind the behavior. And so it's a matter of helping the good people of Oklahoma understand the value in connecting individuals who need treatment with appropriate services. And then also, Rich, obviously we've got to be able to pay for those services. And that's where State Question 781 comes into effect, because if the people determine that individuals who battle addiction or mental illness should be in treatment rather than incarcerated, the way that we would pay for the enhanced treatment options is through the cost savings achieved by reducing the prison population for low-level offenders.
Yeah. As you well know, in a lot of places in the state, mental health services for people in crisis, oftentimes the only avenue for those people in crisis is once the criminal justice system gets involved. And unfortunately, in many cases, a lot of times, that crisis situation is resolved by putting the person in a county jail. Will this directly address that?
It will. It absolutely will. In fact, that's the exact purpose of these reforms. I had the opportunity, myself and some others within the coalition, Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, had the opportunity to speak to the Sheriff's Association convention about a month ago, and there were sheriffs from across the state present in the room, and it was very clear, nearly every sheriff that verbalized concern about what was going on within his or her jurisdiction indicated that in their counties, their jails, the jail had become the largest mental health provider in the entire county. The problem with that is jails are not equipped to be mental health providers. Honestly, they're not paid to provide mental health services, and the staff oftentimes are not trained or equipped to be mental health providers. And so the sheriffs and deputies, you know, ultimately go into law enforcement to apprehend the bad guys, if you will, and, you know, patrol their communities to increase public safety. Trained professionals need to be the ones providing treatment and mental health care so that sheriffs and jails can serve the purpose that they are designed to serve. And ultimately, when you have jails that are full of individuals who are all, you know, battling addiction or mental illness, you have very limited space left to secure or to house an individual who may ultimately pose a danger to the community. And so, and the other aspect is that, and depending on where the sheriff may be located, what county he may be from in Oklahoma, they spend significant amount of time transporting a person that may be apprehended who is in a mental health crisis to the nearest crisis center. And oftentimes that nearest crisis center is across state lines. It's in another state. And so if we can secure funding and redirect funding to ultimately support additional addiction treatment services and mental health crisis centers and mental health care across Oklahoma, then we can begin to get a handle on the situation and increase public safety ultimately by addressing these conditions properly and appropriately.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the state questions in specific. As we mentioned, it really, you're hoping that Oklahomans will vote for both 780 and 781 because one without the other really doesn't work. Now, these are statutory questions rather than constitutional questions. Is a vote of the people only way to get these laws passed? Is that the thinking, that the legislature just will not act on these?
Well, so given what I know about how the legislature thinks, and how they perceive what their constituents think, if State Question 780 and 781 pass, I truly believe the legislature will feel like the people have spoken, and it is okay and maybe even expected to take a smarter approach to public safety, to reducing crime, And so I think it's very, very important that these two-state questions receive support at the polls on November the 8th. Ultimately, I think that state questions 780 and 781 are the first step in continuing this conversation for a responsible, logical policy designed to address core issues behind criminogenic behavior or activity. But I think it gives us a good foundation. Ultimately, bypassing the legislature and letting the people decide, I think, sends a clear message that the people of Oklahoma, you know, ultimately want to make the best use of our state's resources, want to make sure that we're achieving a positive outcome when it comes to the money that we're spending on quote-unquote corrections to actually, you know, improve public safety within our communities.
Now, 780 would amend existing Oklahoma laws and would change the classification of certain drug possession laws and property crimes from felony to misdemeanor. That means a limited quantity of drugs would be a misdemeanor. Would that mean no jail time? Would it mean moving to alternative programs? Would it mean fines? What exactly?
So that's exactly right. State question 780 is the actual contains the actual policy changes, the reforms that we're asking the people of Oklahoma to consider. And what 780 basically does is it reclassifies simple drug possession and low-level property crimes under $1,000 from felony convictions punishable by incarceration, which is what they are today, to misdemeanors punishable by treatment, mental health care, and supervision in the community. It's important to note, first of all, that manufacturing of drugs remains a felony conviction. Distributing drugs remains a felony conviction. Possession with intent to distribute remains a felony conviction. We're only talking about simple possession, meaning the person who is using to feed an addiction. And with each misdemeanor, these offenses moving forward, should 780 and 781 pass, would be misdemeanors. But each misdemeanor carries with it up to a punishment of up to a year in the county jail. That's the consequence if a person refuses to, you know, partake in a treatment or work the treatment plan that he or she has been designed. There needs to be a consequence, and so the consequence would be up to a year in jail. But ultimately, we are trying to get individuals who need treatment connected with appropriate levels of treatment. So the purpose is to move individuals these low-level offenses out of the county jail, out of the state prison, and into proper and appropriate treatment services.
Let me ask you, under current law, are there pretty wide discrepancies based on where the offense takes place between whether you go into a treatment program now, say, in Oklahoma or Tulsa County or maybe Comanche County in Lawton, as opposed to LaFleur County or Beaver County out in the northwest part of the state? We see wide discrepancies in how offenders are sentenced under, you know, these proposed changes.
There is a vast discrepancy currently in state law. So if you get convicted in your example in LaFleur County and you get convicted for the same offense in Tulsa County, it's quite possible that the two individuals would receive quite different ranges of punishment. And so there's broad discrepancy that is given to district attorneys, to judges, to courts, to counties to determine the punishment, the consequence for the crimes. To be clear, that discretion remains the same, even if these questions should pass as far as the discrepancy itself. What would change is that simple possession of drugs and or low-level property crimes would no longer be felony convictions, rather they would be misdemeanors. And Rich, let me just comment on that very quickly. That's very significant because a felony conviction ultimately acts as a scarlet letter for life that excludes a person from participating in most employment opportunities, in most housing opportunities. Even today, most people won't even rent to a person who is a convicted felon. And that designation stays with an individual, you know, for the rest of their life. And so what we're saying is we have to give people an opportunity to turn their lives around and to ultimately go on and become contributing, productive members of our society. They've got to be able to take care of their families. They've got to be able to pay taxes and take care of themselves. And a felony conviction is a very serious designation that ultimately causes a myriad of problems for generations, because it affects even the family, the kiddos, and so on and so forth.
Now, it also targets the 780 also targets larceny too, and grand larceny, which could involve, the taking of property. And when you talk about taking property, I know a lot of homeowners are really concerned about burglary rings. So how will people make assessments of who this person is, whether it's a person in crisis with maybe a mental health crisis, or for someone who's addicted to illegal substances that are stealing to support their habit, versus maybe a more sophisticated burglary ring?
Right. So, and let me note that the legislature already addressed one of the reforms in State Question 780 as it relates to property crimes. This past session, the legislature changed the law to increase the felony threshold for stealing on general property from $500 to $1,000. Most states have already done that. In fact, Texas, two years ago, increased their felony property threshold to $2,500. And for what it's worth, Texas has the lowest property crime rate. Their property crime rate is at a 30-year low, but it's because they've also invested in treatment services. And through that, they've been able to, again, connect individuals who battle addiction and mental illness with appropriate services. And by doing that, they've resolved the issue behind the crime. So it's not uncommon for a person to steal to feed a habit. And so if the cause of the crime is never addressed, the crime is going to continue and maybe even get worse. And other states have already taken these steps. In fact, Oklahoma has started the process of taking these steps. And so what 780 does is bring up to the level of $1,000 other property crimes. Their property crimes are kind of spread out throughout state statutes. So there's a separate property crime if you steal something in relation to fish or game, and there's another property crime if you steal something in the oil and gas field or so on and so forth. So State Question 780 brings all those property crimes up to the $1,000 threshold. And that's just keeping up with inflation. So the reality is if a person steals somebody's smartphone in today's world, chances are if it's a newer phone, it's valued at $500 or more, and that person would become a convicted felon for life. And again, stealing is never okay. But what we have to do is address the cause behind the stealing. And to answer your question, when a person would be apprehended for one of these offenses, they would be given an assessment, and the assessment will indicate if there are other issues that are going on that need to be addressed.
My guest today is a former State House Speaker, Chris Steele, who served in the legislature from 2001 to 2012. He's the chair of Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, which are proponents of State Question 780 and 781. Now, the 781 is basically taking the savings from the reduced prison population, from the reduced cost of corrections, and moving this into rehabilitative programs. And I assume you're looking at, if not all 77 counties, regional centers where people can get help for addiction, for mental health. How much money are we talking about that's likely to be moving from correctional punishment to rehabilitation?
Well, that's a great question, and so you're exactly right. And let me point out that as we talk this morning, our prison population stands at nearly 120% capacity in Oklahoma. We're literally busting at the seams. And again, I submit that it's very important that our state have the space and resources available to incarcerate individuals who truly pose a threat to the community. But in order to do that, we're going to have to not incarcerate low-level offenders who, through the scientific assessments, do not pose a legitimate threat to public safety. Those individuals can be better treated through supervision and treatment in the community. And so it costs, on average, $15,000 a year to incarcerate an individual in Oklahoma. it costs approximately $6,000 a year to provide treatment and supervision in a community. So not only can we redirect these savings back to local communities to invest and enhance and expand treatment and mental health care, we can also make better use of our state's resources and actually serve more people. The data would indicate that approximately 25% of individuals who are admitted into the Department of Corrections custody in any given year fall into the categories of the reforms in State Question 780. So what that means is moving forward, we have an opportunity to reduce our prison population by 25%, which equates to about $25 to $30 million a year that will be redirected and placed in treatment and mental health care.
Now, one of the things when we spoke about the Criminal Justice Reinvestment Initiative several years ago, one of the things you were talking about was the idea of having programs in all 77 counties is probably not that realistic, because when you look at crime statistics, there are hotbeds areas. Right. And probably when you look at the people affected by these changes proposed in 780, there are hot spots. I know what you were talking about a few years ago was really pushing the rehabilitative programs into those areas where you had these hot spots.
Right. And so ultimately what we're proposing now is falls in line with that to some extent, in that the redirection of these dollars will go to counties initially based on the population of the county. And that is the fairest way that we know how to redistribute, reinvest these dollars. And the data would support that where more people live, there's a greater need for treatment and rehabilitative programming. And so ultimately, the majority, proportionately, the dollars will follow where the greatest needs exist within the state.
But if it's based on population, what if you find a hot spot where maybe the population is not so large? Do you have the flexibility to apply rehabilitative services to that area?
We do, and that is a great point. And you mentioned this earlier in our interview. These changes are statutory changes, and they can be amended, they can be tweaked, they can be improved in any given year through the legislative process, and that is by design, and it's for the very reason that you just described. So as we get into this and as we notice that more money needs to go to a certain area, that can absolutely be achieved through simply amending the statute through the legislative process.
Now, currently, Representative Steele, you're executive director of the Education and Employment Ministry, and that's really a nonprofit group that's trying to help get people back into the workforce, back on their feet after preventing incarceration and also after incarceration, from what I understand. Can you give us a sense of what you're seeing with your nonprofit as far as how these questions, if they're approved, would affect the people you're seeing that come through your nonprofit?
Yes, sir. So we serve individuals who are transitioning back into the community after a period of incarceration, and we also engage in a diversion program that is intended to and designed to keep people from going to prison, people who are at risk and potentially may be making choices that could lead there. We try our best to, we have a program designed to intervene and try to prevent that from happening. But I would just tell you that incarceration is devastating to an individual and to their family. And so what we see time and again is after a person has paid their debt and served their time and begins the process of reentering the community, again, they have this felony conviction that excludes them from participating pro-socially in most areas, employment, housing, et cetera. In addition to that, the individual has enormous fees and fines that they have to pay back in conjunction with their sentence, because in large part, the legislature is now funding our criminal justice system on the backs of people who commit crimes and can least afford to pay it, and it's very problematic. The other thing that we see is that if a person is battling addiction or mental illness and they've not received any treatment or care or intervention for that issue, they're still going to be battling that that condition, and so they got to have help there, and you know they've got a family to take care of, and then they've also picked up some pretty bad behavior from being warehoused in a hostile environment while being incarcerated, because that's where we're at today with our prison population being maxed out and over capacity. It's really nothing more than warehousing individuals, and so as they transition back into the community, there's a host of issues that they have to deal with in order to even have a chance to get back up on their feet and be a responsible citizen. And again, for the low-level offender who does not pose a threat to public safety, if we can avoid incarceration and avoid the dynamic and the disruption of losing a job and being separated from their family and that financial burden, if we can also avoid the felony stigma associated with the current sentencing guidelines and connect that person with the help that they need, we know and we believe that that individual can turn their lives around and it'll be much less disruptive to their family. It'll be much less disruptive to the individual, and it ultimately improves the quality of life for everyone in the community. And it's not just what I think. These are the outcomes and the results that have been achieved from other states who have already enacted the reforms that we're suggesting in State Question 780 and 781.
Now, you mentioned that this could reduce the incoming prison population down by 20 to 25%. And that's the direct cost. What you've been alluding to is the indirect cost. Do we have a good sense of what that indirect cost of, say, incarcerating a family member does for the family long range? You mentioned all the restrictions they have once they get out, rent, employment status. Do we have a good sense of what that indirect cost once that person is returned to the population and on the family as well?
Sure. It is very hard to calculate because the ripple effect is so deep. I would just point out that Oklahoma also has the distinction of having the highest number of grandparents raising grandchildren, and it's related to the issue of also having the highest number of female offenders incarcerated and the second highest rate overall of incarceration. If you look at the number of kiddos in foster care who need services and need assistance and how those numbers continue to grow, I would submit that issue is also directly related to the issue of mass incarceration in Oklahoma. And the financial impact and the social impact within our state is just enormous. I don't have a figure that I can give you, a direct dollar amount, and it's hard to calculate because it's so devastating.
Yeah. Now, if people want more information before they go into the ballot booth on November 8th about State Question 780 and 781, is there a place that Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, or do you have a website or information that people can learn more about this?
Yes, sir. They can go to www.okjusticereform.org and find out all the information they would need to know.
All right. Well, Chris Steele, we appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Chris Steele is a former member of the legislature and former Oklahoma House Speaker and the chair of Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, which backs the passage of State Question 780 and 781. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.